Make sure you're subscribed to Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit that subscribe button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for other podcast listeners to find Issues Etc.
That phrase, no creed but the Bible, is in fact a creed, and it's also not in the Bible.
Sin is a thing that's in the rearview mirror, and they're just supercharged in their sanctification. And by the way, everybody in that group, they're lying. It's a flat-out self-righteous lie. It's a lot of paint on a facade of righteousness that's not true.
We also ought never be so secure in the strength of our faith that we don't think we need to keep on learning.
It's much more Roman Catholic in terms of the Middle Ages, you know, to see the choirs in that light. As performers, they do the singing while the congregation just sits there and observes. In a lot of ways, contemporary music in the church, led by the praise band and the singers with microphones in front of the congregation, has encouraged that very same thing to happen today.
Northern Illinois chainsaw drivers, love, Issues Etc.
You've been hearing a lot about the 1619 Project. It is, well, what? It's been awarded. It has been recognized. It has received accolades. The goals are really pretty simple. Rewrite U.S. history around slavery. Seek reparations now for the descendants of those slaves. There are other political goals. We don't know exactly always what they are. One thing that is not among its priorities is the truth. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Tuesday afternoon, the 26th of October. We're going to be talking about an admission of advocacy journalism by the creator of the New York Times 1619 Project. Dr. Mary Graybar, author of the new book, Debunking the 1619 Project, will be our guest. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson with Pastor Tom Baker. Jesus teaches the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4. Our weekly series, Through the Old Testament and the Church Year, continues. We'll talk about justification in the book of Zechariah, and then day 3 of Issues Etc. Reformation Week today, from Mormonism to Lutheranism. We'll be joined by Susan Hatcher. She was a Mormon for more than 20 years. Joining us to talk about an admission of advocacy journalism by the creator of the New York Times 1619 Project, Dr. Mary Graybar. She's a resident fellow at the Alexander Hamilton Institute for the Study of Western Civilization, author of the new book, Debunking the 1619 Project, and a recent column for The Federalist titled, Nicole Hannah-Jones Admits Her 1619 Project is a Useful Political Narrative. Dr. Graybar, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Why does Nicole Hannah-Jones continue to receive awards and accolades for what has been clearly demonstrated to be revisionist history of the American founding?
Yeah, well, those who are giving her these awards are people who share her far-left political goals, and they don't care about the accuracy of history. And so she has become this spokesperson. She's intersectional, she's female, she is actually biracial, but she's Black. And so they found someone who is articulating their views and doing it in a highly emotional way. And they use her as a kind of a shield. They can't be attacked if she, this woman who weaves in her personal experiences, is a victim of historical racism.
What is the 1619 Project's version of the American founding?
Basically, that it started in 1619 when they falsely claim that the first Africans who arrived were the first slaves. From that moment on, our economy has been built on slavery. And so essentially, we are a slaveocracy. That's the term that is used in Nicole Hannah-Jones's lead essay. We are a slaveocracy. We are approaching a democracy, but that is due to the activists of the civil rights movement and those on the far left. So the ideals that were expressed in the Declaration of Independence, the principles of the Constitution, are all just statements by hypocrites. So what we need to look at, according to the 1619 Project, is the basis for our country, which is slavery.
What did Hannah Jones recently say in an accepted speech after receiving the Freedom of Speech Award from the Roosevelt Institute?
Yeah, it was very interesting. I was listening to it, and, you know, this is a quote. She says that narrative allows for policy. The narrative that she was referring to is the 1619 Project, which on numerous occasions, maybe depending on the day of the week, she claims is historical truth. So here she's referring to it as a narrative, a story, and it allows for policy, and the policy explicitly is reparations. So here she admitted that this is what is claimed to be a history. It's taught as such in K through 12 schools, is really advocacy for reparations.
Tell us about a recent interview that Hannah Jones did with Dorian Warren of Community Change.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It was typical of her exchanges. Dorian Warren, you know, was fawning in his approach to her. He's associated with the far, far left Nation magazine. She acted the role of the drama queen, pretending she was being persecuted for telling the truth about history. And he asked her, you know, how she was holding up, which is quite laughable. And in my book, Debunking the 1619 Project, I explain how much money she is earning. I had about a dozen or more Freedom of Information requests sent out to public colleges where she has given talks, usually twice a month, and she makes $25,000 for each one, whether it's remotely or in person. So she is raking in the money. She is far from being persecuted, and her latest drama at UNC Chapel Hill, where she demanded tenure with her appointed chair position and got it, indicates that she is anything but a victim.
Do we know where Hannah Jones got her view of American history?
She basically got it in a high school black studies class. She's written about it and talked about it. And it was her first black teacher. She was bused to a majority white school, and she must have been struck by Mr. Dial. She's waxed on about him on Twitter. She did so last Christmas. And he introduced her to the writings of Lerone Bennett, who was this polemicist magazine writer for Ebony Magazine. And he had written a book in the mid-60s called Before the Mayflower, and that was the inspiration for the 1619 Project. Lerone Bennett is no historian. He distorts history. He is a propagandist. It is not written in a neutral way. And he is the one who coined the phrase Black Power in 1966. And that term was taken up by Stokely Carmichael, and it was used as a rallying cry for rioting and violence. So that's the main inspiration for her, and she is still basically stuck in her view of history, the one that she had when she was a high school student.
You mentioned an economic reinterpretation of history that is at the center of the 1619 Project. What particular claims does Hannah Jones make about the economic impact of slavery in America?
Well, what she does is she takes what Edward Baptist, who is a professor at Cornell University and a member of the New School of Capitalism. It's a neo-Marxist school. It has been widely criticized for innumeracy, so these historians can't do basic math, so it's been widely criticized by economists and economic historians. So the claim in the 1619 Project by her and by one of the essays, Matthew Desmond, you know, that is also published there, the claim there is that cotton in the antebellum period made up about 50% of the nation's GDP. So it's the old King Cotton argument revived, but now used to claim that it was slave labor that built the wealth of this country. They're off by a little bit. It was more like 5%. So they exaggerated the number 10 times. So that is a major problem that has never been changed, and they still stick with it.
Based on that flawed math, one of Hannah Jones' goals is reparations. What would that look like, according to her?
Yeah, she's not very specific, but in her essay that came out in June of 2020 in the New York Times Magazine called What is Owed, she said that anyone who had identified as being Black for the previous 10 years and who could trace their ancestry back to someone who had been enslaved would be owed reparations. You know, that, of course, is the tricky part. How much is paid? Who pays whom? And as I point out in some of my other essays and in my book, Debunking the 1619 Project, in American history, there were some Blacks who were both enslaved. And then after being granted their freedom or earning it, they then became enslavers. And so it's very, very complicated. You're going back some almost 200 years, sometimes more. So how do you make that determination? Of course, she hasn't figured out the details other than to say something is owed. And it's not only those who descended from slaves for the historical injustice of slavery, but also anyone who has been redlined, whose neighborhoods have been sort of put off for higher insurance rates. I mean, I lived in an area like that myself, and I'm white. Other whites have. But, you know, anyone who has faced any kind of discrimination. And so you can just imagine the Pandora's box that is being opened. I mean, how do you figure this out? And, you know, it's a logistical nightmare, but nonetheless, she insists that reparations are due.
Mary Graybar is our guest. We're talking about an admission of advocacy journalism by the creator of the New York Times 1619 Project. What are some of the other goals of the project's founder, Hannah Jones? Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.
Now that you're preparing for this year's Advent season, it's time for some contemplation. Those chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam. The glitter has dropped off, and they're held together with toothpicks. Don't celebrate another Christmas harkening back to the age of glitter balls. Come and see Ad Crucem's wonderful collection of Christmons and our other Christmas ornaments. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Life, liberty, what does this mean? The Northern Illinois District Life Task Force invites you to the 4th Annual Life and Liberty Lecture so you can hear more and make the bold confession of Christ and Him crucified for the life of the world. Featured presenters are Issues Etc. guests Dr. Alan Carlson and Katie Faust. Saturday, October 30th, Bethany Lutheran Church, Naperville, Illinois. Find out more and register at nidlcms.org/life.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about an admission of advocacy journalism by the creator of the New York Times 1619 Project, Nicole Hannah-Jones. Dr. Mary Graybar is our guest. Dr. Graybar, what are Hannah-Jones' other goals?
Well, the goals are political. Nicole Hannah-Jones is an admirer of Fidel Castro and of his regime in Cuba, and she aligns with the far left of the Democratic Party, with AOC, basically the squad. Her tweets just simply regurgitate their points. She's for socialized medicine, for draconian sort of laws that would mandate vaccines, big government. So the goal of the 1619 Project is twofold. I think the first one is to obviously indoctrinate students so that they will agree with those far left political goals and advocate and agitate for a kind of socialist regime. And the second goal clearly is reparations.
How has 1619 been received by reputable historians?
Well, it's very interesting. It was immediately attacked for its view of its founding. There was Gordon Wood and Sean Wilentz, and there were five writers of a letter, signers of a letter that objected to the portrayal of the founding. I don't think they could get an audience. The New York Times put them off. They were finally published in a Trotskyist website. And Sean Wilentz, was harshly critical. And Leslie Harris, who specializes in African American history and is a good historian, also revealed about 6 months after the project came out that she had been hired as a consultant. But when she objected to some of the claims, or many of the claims, in the 1619 Project and corrected them, she was ignored. And, you know, they went ahead and published it knowing that the information was false, knowing it from the very historian that they had hired. But both of these people who are on the political left are good historians, but are on the political left, however, backtracked. And then once conservatives also rightfully criticized the points of the 1619 Project, they came out and they defended the 1619 Project. Wilentz insisted that she should have been granted tenure when she was offered a position at UNC Chapel Hill. So it was very disappointing to see that they did not stick to their original claims as historians, as honest historians, no matter where the ideological chips might fall, but then turned around and insisted that the 1619 Project not be censored, as they said, or be pulled out of curricula in schools, and that slavery was a central part of our history. So, you know, I think we can take some lessons from their reactions, you know, larger lessons about the profession of historical scholarship.
Finally, one of the reasons for teaching history is to prevent us from repeating the mistakes of the past. How would you respond to someone who claims that that's what the 1619 Project is trying to accomplish?
Well, when you do that, when you study history with a goal like that, you're not really being open to all the evidence. So if you're looking for something specific, you tend to, you know, get blinders put on. And slavery was really bad. Of course, we don't want to repeat that. But what we should do is we should look at history honestly without any preconceived end goals in mind. And then look at it and say, okay, well, what has happened in the past? And obviously, most people today would say, yeah, we should not have slavery. But it should be looked at objectively. So those who are advocates for the 1619 Project repeat the claims about slavery in America. However, they fail to notice slavery in other parts of the world that still exists. In China, the Muslim minority that's making their cell phones and their computers and other products, and in Africa. So, you know, I think that with the narrow aim of like not repeating mistakes or having any kind of a ideological agenda limits what you will get from studying history. So I would say go into it with an open mind and look at all the evidence, and then you can stand back and say, well, yeah, in a broader perspective, yeah, we should not be doing that. And those who are using the 1619 Project are not being told that there is slavery in the world today. It's been around since the beginning of history. And it's because the 1619 Project leaves those things out, and it does so deliberately with this ideological goal in mind.
Mary Graybar is a resident fellow at the Alexander Hamilton Institute for the Study of Western Civilization. She's author of the new book, Debunking the 1619 Project, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Nicole Hannah Jones Admits Her 1619 Project is a Useful Political Narrative. You can read this column and purchase Debunking the 1619 Project at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Dr. Graybar, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
When we return, we'll be with Pastor Tom Baker teaching a Sunday school lesson, Jesus Teaching the Samaritan Woman in John chapter 4.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many educational institutions are governed by the whims of culture and are increasingly hostile to the Word of God. In contrast, Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, provides classical Lutheran education rooted in God's Word for students preschool through grade 12. Simply put, we equip students to stand firm in the faith through solid education focused on wisdom and virtue. We offer in-person instruction as well as live online classes for remote learning. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.